Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, one and all, on a very warm evening here in Northeast Ohio, and of course our air conditioning died. Human beings should not live without air conditioning. So anyway, I'm Eric Olson. I am happy to be here. And I literally just, man, I was running up the stairs. I'm sweating. I'm losing my mind. I jump. I land in the chair. I pick up the phone. I dial. I hear the Blog Talk Radio. Teresa, are you here?
I am here. I was getting a little nervous there. Didn't see the number up there. I'm glad everything's okay. You know, Eric, our air conditioning died as well. Went to turn it on yesterday, and no air conditioning. But for some reason, my husband worked some magic and switched a fuse, and it seems to be blowing a little bit better. But I think it's time for a new air conditioner.
Oh, my God. It's the topic has been open. My parents, who only live a few blocks from us, their house is big, you know, 70s, big, I don't know how many, six-bedroom house, just 7 million square feet. Not really, but it's big. Full basement, it's a lot of territory. Way bigger than they need at 80, both of them. Anyway, that's a whole other topic. But it's so big, is my point. They have two air conditioners, one for each side of the house. They're both out. Their house is like 80 degrees. They're 80 years old. My mother doesn't get around that well, so she is really miserable. And they literally, they have to get two new air conditioners. I didn't even realize how much they are. When I heard the figure, I just about came unglued. Anyway, ours is a question of a blower motor, and this is the third blower motor since we have lived here. It's only 10 years, three blower motors, but that is nowhere near the madness of an entirely new air conditioner. Anyway, I'm not sure everyone's quite as fascinated with this, but we can certainly commiserate with each other. So, golly, I got every window open and all the fans on. It's just the air is just so dead. And, my God, it's only May. Anyway, really exciting show. You guys know, all you regular listeners, and we know you're out there in regular listener land. You know, typically we talk to people who are involved with the various paranormal TV shows. Not always, but more often than not, way more often than not, we've interviewed pretty much every star of every show, you know, current and that has existed within the last year. But tonight we're going off in a completely different direction, and what's so exciting about it is, as you all also know who listen to the show, we're working on a book. We're technically only halfway through. We did turn in half, but we're hoping it's a lot quicker second half than first half, just because we've learned how to do it and whatnot, and we know we got to make it happen. Anyway, so we've turned in that first half, and we're covering 10 haunted locations, the 10 most haunted public or semi-public locations in the country. And we've never specifically talked about any of those locations, but tonight we are going to. So, Teresa, why don't you tell us what we're going to do and what we're talking about and who we're talking to?
All right, tonight I'm very excited. This is a show that's going to be near and dear to my heart. We're going to talk to a couple of good friends of mine, both who've had some wonderful experiences, and both are affiliated with the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in Weston, West Virginia, one of the places that is featured in our book. And when I was there last year in March with a couple of my other haunted housewife friends and some Paranormal Challenge alumni, we all had a nice evening there. I was lucky enough to meet both of these gentlemen and work with them. Tonight we have Zach McCormick and Adam Bonnet. Now, they're two individuals, each have a different perspective on the paranormal for very different reasons. I'll tell you a little bit about each. Zach, his interest in the paranormal began at an early age. He had some issues going on, and he liked the stories that made him sleep with the light on. He also became interested in tracking down urban legends and taking pictures. He developed into a photography career, along with his paranormal career. So he views the paranormal through the eyes of a photographer, which actually is a very different way to view things. I met Zach as our guide at TALA, and I also met another gentleman named Adam Bonnet. Adam, a.k.a. Glider, is unusual because I have never met any paranormal investigator who is wheelchair-bound. But that does not stop Adam. It doesn't limit him at all. He is a very serious paranormal investigator. He's got a unique perspective just from where he's sitting on the paranormal, and he actually is the assistant manager at TALA for their haunted house and their tours, and we're going to talk to him tonight, too. I tell you, I was so impressed with both of these guys when I met him, and we had some amazing experiences, and we're going to talk about them both tonight and other things that they're up to. Zach also is affiliated with another very haunted place that didn't make it in this book, but it might make it in the next one, Pennhurst State School. So tonight, Adam Bonnet and Zach McCormick, welcome to America's Most Haunted, and I do believe they're on the line.
Hello, Teresa.
What's up, man?
Hello.
How's it going, guys?
It's going good. Now, you have to say who you are so Eric can tell your voices apart because he's not going to know.
This is Zach.
Zach is actually featured in the book, so when you pick up the book, when it's done, you'll hear a little bit more about Zach and his experiences. And is Adam with us as well?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, Adam. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much for joining us. This is exciting. I'm very glad to have you on. Again, one of the reasons I asked you two to be on the show tonight, not just because I knew you, because of your affiliation, obviously, with TALA, because it is featured in our book, but also your other experiences and other things that you bring to the paranormal and your views on things. So we're going to talk, of course, about TALA and about your experiences, but then we'll branch out and talk a little bit more about some of the other things you're doing and other things you're involved in, especially Adam. Adam is going to tell us all about Glider. And when you go to their Facebook pages, and you'll get a little bit more on what that is and what he's doing with that, and it's a wonderful thing. So welcome, guys. How's it going?
Hello.
For some reason, I decided it would be really nice to let Adam go first. I think Adam thought the same thing. That's going really well on my part.
Waiting on you,
we'll
Zach.
Try to direct our questions to each of you so you guys don't talk over each other and be silent at the same time. Now, I don't know if you've met Eric. Eric Olson is my partner in crime here on America's Most Haunted and writing the book. And Eric talked extensively with Michelle when we were doing our book interview, so he didn't get to talk to you. Zach, we had some interesting conversations and had some good times. But this is Eric Olson.
Nice to meet you, Eric. I have heard a lot of stuff about you, all good stuff.
Well, probably at least more than 50% good. Anyway, hey, I feel like I know you as well because, you know, I've been reading your stories. You know, I've read your interviews that Teresa did about the place. And, I mean, I probably couldn't be much more better prepared other than having been there. I've never been there. But, golly, having, you know, edited the chapter, and that's the last one we just did. We just turned this one in. This was the fifth chapter. So I feel very fresh. Why don't we start with that? Let's just do, and who better than you guys collectively, and you can kind of go in whichever order you'd like. But, you know, because you're both guides and you both know the tale so well, why don't you just kind of pretend like we're going on a little bit of a tour and tell us about the place. Why is it of interest in the first place? Why is it so popular? Why do so many people come through there looking for a ghost? Among other things, historical amazingness and the history of mental illness in the nation and whatnot. So go right ahead. Why don't we start with Zach?
Well, I mean, infinite history, which I don't know as well as many, aside, just have to factor in the fact that there were so many things that happened in that building and on the property. I mean, I've even talked to people that I know that are slightly skeptical about it. And I said, well, think about this. You know, if there is such a thing as, you know, paranormal activity, where would it happen? I was like, it would happen in a place where awful things happen to people. You know, prisons, asylums, things like that, where lots of people pass away, you know, whether it be natural causes, whether it be, you know, completely unnatural causes. And they started, you know, this guy started heading to, you know, that really makes sense. And it does. And the only real problem with that is so many people were there and there's so much activity that a lot of times it seems that, you know, say you'll talk to someone who, you know, is very talkative. They'll do all kinds of things for you once, and a lot of times you won't get a chance to talk to them again. It seems like they are, you know, one of so many that reside there. You know, it's not like there's an old grave on the hill where, you know, where somebody haunts and you go there and everybody goes and they talk to the same person. There, it seems that there are so many and it's so active that, you know, it does kind of come in waves. It ebbs and flows. But there are so many there that, you know, a lot of times, unfortunately, you'll be having a great conversation with someone and someone else will push them out of the way, something a little more powerful, a little bit more, I hate to say malevolent, but sometimes something like that will end up taking over. It's something more dominant. But, yes, it's extremely active, and it's a lot of fun to work there.
Hey, Adam, why don't you tell us a little bit about, for people who aren't familiar with TALA, exactly what it is and how try to give them an idea of how big this building actually is and the way it's set up, because that in itself, you know, when you think about a haunted location, you've never seen a haunted location like TALA.
Yeah, it's a really large building. I believe it's 242,000 square feet. So it's a Kirkbride building. You know, the layout of it is hard to explain it, but it's, you know, if you're familiar with the Kirkbride buildings, you know, they're presented to, you know, you have a wing on each side of the main building itself, and then it goes over and then back, you know. So, but, you know, like I say, it's an enormous building itself, so rather large.
It's set up in a V formation with almost like a step formation. And going there, when we were there, and thank God we had Zach with us, because it's so easy to get lost. You think you're on one level, but then the level goes back even more, and each level looks similar, yet they're very different. And if you're not familiar, it's very easy to get turned around. And there are four levels of the main building. And then there's even offshoots in the Civil War section. And the Civil War section is the oldest part of the building, which is one of the most interesting parts of the building as well. But that is only the tip of the iceberg. I didn't get to see the property during the day, but the property itself, it encompasses more than just the building. Is that correct, Zach?
Yeah. It's you know, there's quite a bit of other buildings on the property built later on just because of overcrowding, because of, you know, trying to segregate different types of patients from one another. And we've just recently gotten into opening up those as well and doing separate ghost hunts. And those, actually, this weekend we've got one of those going. And it's cool because you get a totally different activity, and they're not, you know, we haven't really explored them a whole lot, so we're still finding out a lot of new things about them.
And these are spirits that probably haven't had many visitors as opposed to the ones in the main building as well. You're just opening them up for exploration?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they really know as much about communication. They seem to have to instruct them a little bit more on everything, and it's, you know, things will happen, but it seems like it's more of a, you know, it seems like they're still kind of lurking in the back, and they're kind of waiting on their chance to come out. And, you know, and people actually have gotten startled a lot. And it seems like you may be walking down a hallway and nothing's going on, and then something will startle you. And it's happened to quite a few of us since they've opened up the other buildings. And I've actually had some of the more, I guess, randomly bizarre things happen in the other buildings, namely the medical center. And it was during the daytime. And I always tell people, you know, people come in and they think that you can only investigate at night. And I'm like, no, things happen during the daytime. it actually caused me to jump about 6 feet and say an expletive, and it was really funny and really interesting. And it was about 5 o'clock in the evening. It was actually I was there working during the day, and we were closing up with the historic tour guide legend Sue, and I guess somebody had a door move on them earlier in the medical center, and she asked me if I wanted to come over and help her lock up. So we walked through, and she has a very different approach to it. She doesn't do the, you know, whoever wants to communicate with us. She'll walk in and say, you know, hey, who's here? You know, I want to talk to you guys. You know, she'll just be very friendly and everything. And it's you know, just talking to them like you'd talk to anybody else. And we walked down to this one door, and she said, you know, I heard you move this door for someone earlier. Can you do it again? Nothing, obviously, you know, nothing happened. I'm sitting there thinking in my head, you know, the skeptic in me is popping out saying, well, you know, nothing's going to happen. You know, it's just going to, you know, it could have been the wind, but I noticed, well, there's no draft, none of the windows are open. You know, it could have been whatever. And she starts saying, you know, if you don't talk to us now, you're going to be in here by yourselves for a few days. Nobody's going to come through here, and you're going to be lonely. You're going to be all by yourself, so you just as well talk to us. And suddenly this door, which was standing all the way, it was pushed all the way back, moves about 18 inches, and I, being very startled, said a four-letter word and jumped about 10 feet in the air. And I apologize to Sue. I said, no, I never said that word around you, Sue. But, you know, and she's like, oh, it's perfectly fine. So we're on good terms still.
Now, what are some of the...
Pride.
Yeah, I wish I could go back there and see some of these other buildings, although it took the whole night just to get through the one main building for us. And if you're not familiar with what Trans-Allegheny was, or Weston State Hospital, one of the many other names that this place had, it was designed as a place to help people who were mentally ill. But it went through many changes. Now, at the time when they were just starting to realize that people who were mentally ill needed a different kind of help, because before the development of these facilities, they would just kind of lock people up in jails. You know, they would let them wander around and call them the village idiot. Literally, they had no place to go. But unfortunately, back in the day, and they give this to you when you go visit Itala, you could get sent to these hospitals for all sorts of crazy, crazy different symptoms, things that we know today are not mental illness. Adam, can you tell us about some of the crazy reasons people were sent to Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum? And maybe our listeners will understand why maybe these spirits come back and haunt us. I think they're probably a little pissed off for being sent there.
Yeah, I mean, you're correct. I mean, there was a wide variety of things that people would actually be admitted there for. I know that some of them would consist of, you know, a dog bite or a gunshot wound, things like that, tobacco abuse, stuff like that.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of really... really, you know, like you said, things that today's, you know, it's nothing, you know, so but it was just a wide variety of things that it was just, some of them was just unreal.
And I think that's probably one of the reasons why this place is so haunted. Some of these people obviously didn't belong there. Being locked up in this place might have drove them crazy. I mean, it just seemed like it must have been a hellacious place to be, at least at certain times. I'm sure at some points it wasn't quite as bad.
Especially if you were in for PMS.
Yeah. Let me tell you, man, I'd have been locked up and never let out.
That's one of our jokes, is we always say that we would, you know, each of us would be in there for however many reasons. You know, we'd be, if it was 150 years ago, we'd all been hanging out in there doing the same thing probably. You know, just kind of sitting around just talking to each other.
What are you in for? Irritability. What are you in for? PMS. What are you in for?
Religious fever.
Yeah, religious fever. Abandoning my dumbass husband, etc.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
so
it's,
yeah.
It's kinda...
I mean, it is really interesting. I learned. I mean, that was part of what was so interesting about the chapter was kind of in the context of each of these major locations, of which yours is certainly one. It's really interesting to kind of get the context of it. You know, why is this building here? Why is it haunted? Why is it so big? And to learn kind of the history of institutions on the one hand in the country, whereas, as Teresa was saying, you know, prior to the mid-1800s, the way that that the mentally ill or the emotionally unstable, again, it's such a wide bunch of people and a wide variety of symptoms from, you know, genuinely really just stark raving insane to just, you know, there's substance abuse, there's all these various sort of peculiarities and irritabilities that we've already mentioned, all these people put in there. But the reason why the institutions arose in the first place was because there were all these people who were not being treated in any kind of consistent manner. Much of the way society approached these people is it was their own fault. You know, there was a religious aspect to it. This was some sort of moral failing. And so they justify doing horrible things to them, just locking them away, letting them just wander around, you know, out in the town, the more benign side of it, putting them in prison. I mean, that's what started the whole Dorothea Dix crusade. She was the main crusader for mental health care in America in the 19th century. She saw people who were literally naked in chains in a prison in Massachusetts, and she was just simply appalled. So, you know, the way this began, the irony of it, the irony of the story is this was all absolutely with the best intentions. And these very, very large institutions then grew up and were created in throughout the country, and including Trans-Allegheny, you know, with the intention of finally giving these people the kind of attention and the kind of treatment that they deserve. Why don't you tell us where it went from there? Because it's a winding and crooked path from those very, very best intention beginnings back in the mid-1800s.
I mean, yeah, once the overcrowding started to happen, it started to really go downhill. And the irony was that, you know, Dorothea Dix tried to get people out of that situation, and within 75 years, they were back in it again, except they were just in a different institution altogether. They weren't, you know, they weren't chained in a basement anymore, but they were, you know, 30 in a room, or they were roving in gangs, and there were rapings, and there were horrible things going on, and it just sort of came completely back around. But, you know, with the advent of medication and, you know, a little bit of knowledge, they realized that, you know, not everybody needs to be locked up. Not everybody should be in here for all these inane reasons. And, you know, that I would almost guarantee that there are people out there that you're going to see in society now that really should be in a place like that. You're going to eventually run into some of these people. I know that I have. I run into them pretty regularly, and they should be in some sort of place. But a lot of them didn't need to be, and it's what gave it the, you know, I was actually watching American Horror Story Asylum, and, you know, everybody's like, this is such a great TV show. This, I'm like, you know, it's a little far-fetched, but not as much as you would think for the 1950s, 60s, in a place like that. Yeah, it's not that far-fetched. Unfortunately, that's the way some things went.
It's really sickening to think about.
The same thing. I thought of that too. And I was reading, you know, what Therese had written about the place and the history of it and the interviews, the first person accounts of the various paranormal events. And that's exactly, that was the first thing I thought of. I thought, my God, you know, this, I can visualize, even though I haven't been there, I can visualize a lot of these scenes exactly from that, from the American Horror Story. So it was, sure, it's probably more compressed, it's a little more condensed. Can we? I'm having a hard time. Adam, I think it's you. I'm pretty sure it's you. When you're talking, can you get your phone any louder? Is there anything you can do? You're considerably quieter than the other phones, I think. Is that a possibility? That would be quite helpful.
I can try to, or I'll just speak louder if that's
there. You go.
Bellow directly into the phone like I do.
There you go. Yes. Yeah, try to outshout Eric. You'll be fine.
Gotcha.
You know, one of the things that stood out to me during this research, the thing that probably really bothered me, and I'm actually kind of glad I didn't know as much as I did when I went, because I might not have wanted to go before I investigated, was some of the real history. The paranormal stuff I can almost handle more than some of the real history behind these places. But lobotomies. And if you don't know what a lobotomy is, it's supposedly a surgical procedure that damages part of the brain, and it's supposed to make patients more docile and able, more calm. And it's really just brutal. And there was a specific doctor at Tala that had a panache for doing this, and he did quite a bit of it. And it was almost like a conveyor belt of people coming through having these horrible things done to them. And there are many theories in the paranormal of why we stay behind and why ghosts haunt a place and what a ghost is. But when you think about a place like Tala and other places like it, these people, half the time they might have been confused of where they were, what they were doing, who they were, what was going on, concept of time. All these things were probably very confusing to them. And when they pass, after they die, maybe what remains is still just as confused, which is one of the reasons why I think that place is so haunted. I think there was so much confusion in life. What is to say that it changes automatically just because their physical body dies? And there are so many different types of spirits, from Civil War spirits to supposedly children's spirits to negative, malevolent type of energy and entities. It's got everything there. And I think one of the reasons the place is so haunted is because of all the chaos and confusion and just madness that went on in this place. And, of course, you know, we're here to talk about ghosts and ghost stories. I want to hear some of your good stories or some of your theories of what's going on in Tala. And, Adam, especially with you, I'm really interested. And for those of you who didn't read the intro or don't know who Adam is in a wheelchair. So Adam's got limited mobility, but it doesn't prevent him from doing what he does. And tell us a little bit about how your condition affects what you do and how you do it as a paranormal investigator. I would think maybe the spirits have a little bit of kinship toward you. Maybe they feel, maybe not that it was really hospital, but for those of you, like especially the Civil War section, maybe anybody who might have been injured might feel like a little bit more compelled to communicate with you. Is that true? Or?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it really hinders anything. You know, if anything, it seems to help out for me. You know, they seem to be, you know, what I've dealt with there, I've been followed, you know, and things like that. I have the heavy feelings, and to me it seems that they're more intrigued or interested in me. You know, like my chair has spokes on the wheels of it, you know. Before, I've actually had Lily, she's actually, you know, I was sitting in there doing a session once, and one of the spokes on my chair actually pinged, you know, and I didn't do it at all. No one else was around me, so. But, you know, I think it helps out. I've actually, another story, you know, with me and Zach actually had this happen to us. There's a spirit that we like to talk to. His name's Brian, all right? The night before Zach and I went down there, I was in there, and I went down to talk to him, and there's three doors down through there, and it's on the lower part, the far end of the Civil War section itself. I was in there, and I asked, you know, Brian, I was talking to him, having a session and everything, and there's three doors that's really loose up through there. They'd be really easy to move, you know, so you know, I was sitting there, and I asked Brian, I said, hey, Brian, I said, if there's any way possible, I said, I would really appreciate it if you could help me open up one of those doors. I said, it would be pretty cool if you could. That way I could actually, you know, get through it. So, you know, just probably a couple minutes passed, and I just kept on asking, you know. And all of a sudden I heard, you know, the door itself just kind of creak open a little bit. So I was kind of excited about that, turned on my flashlight and looked at the door, and it was open a little bit, probably 6 inches or so. So, you know, I'd ask again, and I heard it do it just a little bit more. Well, I shined a light over, and it was probably about 7 to 8 inches. So I was telling Zach about that the next night whenever him and I believe, was working a private. Was that what it was, Zach, the night that Brian Mason
was working? It was a Sunday night, right about right around spring of last year, I think, because I noticed it had just gotten to where it was a little bit warmer. And I had heard you tell me the story, and I was like, oh, that's cool, because the doors made a very distinctive creak.
Right.
Nothing else in there made that sound. And all the windows were intact. There was no gust or anything that could come through there.
Right.
And so at the very end of the night, we went down to lock up. We had to lock up this one door. And, of course, the people in the group came down. They said, you know, can we come down to get some extra photo evidence? And honestly, down through there sometimes, the more the merrier. And we're like, yeah, come on with us. Yeah, yeah. So they came
party.
Down with us. Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, yeah, hey, you know, we don't have to get down there by ourselves. We can have some recessive backup. So three of them came down there with us. And we were there, and Adam was to the right part of the hallway. I was to the left. And we were trying to get Brian. We were kind of persuading Brian to talk. Because Brian, a lot of times with Brian, it's kind of like fishing. You know, Brian, are you here, buddy? You know, you're around. Hey, if you're back there, you know, you have to kind of persuade Brian sometimes to talk.
Yeah.
And Brian's definitely, at least to us, Brian's never been like, you know, bang, hey, I'm here. You know, Brian's always sort of, you have to sort of lure Brian out. Well, you know, we're trying to get Brian to talk to us to confirm that that was him the night before. And, you know, we look around, and the three people, they had gotten bored, and they had walked back. And we were there, and Adam says, come on, you know, can you do something for us just to let me know that it was you that made the noise last night? And right next to my ear, I hear a very faint, almost like a bug flying at the wall. It's just like light, as light as a feather, but right next to my ear, like a little tick right on the wall. I said, whoa, did you hear that? Adam says, no. And I said, it was like this, and I mimicked it. Click, right on the wall. And from down in the dark, dead end of the last finger ward of the Civil War section, we hear a bang. Sounds like someone took an aluminum baseball bat to a piece of drywall and smacked it as hard as they could. Bang! God love Adam. He's the most calm investigator I've ever worked with. I jumped about 20 feet. I'm not a scaredy cat, but I'm a very caffeinated person at night, so I jumped out of my skin. And Adam says, it's okay, man, come back. I'm like... And immediately we got back up, you know, when we... You know, Brian wouldn't confirm, wouldn't do anything else, but we get back up to the breaker. I mean, it was a noise that... If you've ever investigated anywhere and you've ever heard the loud noise, you know, the one that takes the cake, this was five times louder than that. It scared the living hell out of me. There was no, there was nothing to compare with. And, you know, we got back at the break room and told them, they're like, aw, man, why did we take off? And
yeah.
Still, and we keep in contact with them. They come, you know, two or three times a year. And I consider some of them to be friends of mine, and still they're like, God, I wish I'd stay there to hear that. I'm like, well, you know, you guys got lazy and walked out.
Now, who is Lily? I know you mentioned, Adam brought up Lily, but for those of the listeners that don't know who Lily is and where she hangs out, tell a little bit about who she is, because she's, well, tell who she is.
You're more her friend than I am, Adam. All right. Lily,
Lily is a little girl spirit that we have there that resides. She resides in Ward 4. She's very, how to explain Lily? She's very playful, energetic. She loves the attention. She loves chocolate, candy, balls. I mean, she's your typical 9-year-old child, you know, that's rambunctious, you know. So, she's like one of my favorite spirits there that I go there and speak to a lot. You know, I get a lot of communication with her. And, you know, I just enjoy going down and talking to her, so.
And Lily is probably the most famous of the spirits there at Talus. She's the one that you hear on all the TV shows and when the ghost hunters or ghost adventures and anybody comes looking for spirits at Talus, they're always looking for Lily. And it seems, at least from speaking with you guys and the other people that I know from Talus, that the more time you spend down there or spend in the building with her, the more relationship you actually have with the spirit, which is, I think, is absolutely fascinating. Like Adam said, Adam likes to go down and just talk to her. That's amazing. When we were there, we had a couple brief little things, but really no interaction with her, you know. But for those of you who spent a lot of time in the building, it's an amazing story. And her origin is really kind of mysterious. It's can't even really prove that she really existed, yet we have spirit communication with her. So that in itself is fascinating. We have questions from the chat room for both of you. And I know the answer to one of them because it happened when I was there. Zach, has anyone tried to break in the building?
that sounds like a question for Jeff Feldman to answer, doesn't it, Adam?
It does.
Break into the building. You know, we've actually honestly thought that people have broken into the building. I remember one night, I hadn't been there very long, maybe 6 months, and I was with my group in Ward 5, which was, we call it the children's ward. You know, things change hands a lot. We tend to refer to a ward as the ward it was when it, you know, the most popular, you know, use of a ward. But we were in Ward 5, and I see our friend, Greg Copperhead T.H. Graham, run by and check a door. And he kind of looked like one of those, I don't know, some kind of an animal out of some National Geographic thing. His head was all low and his hair was swinging and he wasn't saying anything to anybody. And I said, "What's up?" And he just walks by, runs by really fast. And I heard the jingle of keys. I'm like, okay. So he goes clear down through Ward 2, across the center section, through Ward B, over to E, and he checks the door again. I'm like, "What's going on, man?" He's like, "Oh, I thought I heard somebody break in the building." okay. Apparently people were hearing and seeing noises from the cafeteria. So we had to check every way in and every way out, and, of course, everything was, you know, battened down tight. From what I was told is that the people in the groups had seen a light move through the catwalks, the cafeteria, through the other side, and they heard some noises over there. So, of course, we automatically assume that some neighborhood kid or something has, you know, found a way in and is, you know, taking his girlfriend in there to scare her or something, you know. So we checked everything and can't find anything. And there's been all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, had we not been talking to Brian that night, we'd heard that noise, we would have thought that somebody had put Copperhead and Jeff broke into the building.
When we were there, we were actually in the Civil War section. We were heading back towards the older part of the building, and we heard these noises coming from outside. And of course, we didn't know they were coming outside, so we stopped and we were getting a little freaked out and trying to figure out where they were coming from. And so we had a spirit box going, and we stopped it because the echo was incredible. It was so loud. It was just bouncing off the walls. So we got real quiet. We heard the sound, and we turned off all our flashlights, and we're hunkered down being very quiet. And we could hear these people coming up towards the window from outside. These were living people, by the way. And they got right to the window, and we jumped up at them almost at the same time they were looking in. And we scared the hell out of them, but then they scared us too. It was really quite funny. But, you know, they're going around checking to see what's going on. I would imagine that there's probably lots of people trying to break in at times. I know if I was a teenager and I lived anywhere near there, I'm sure I would be doing it as well.
It's gotten progressively better since they start. I mean, you know, you first get a building like that, you don't have a lot of money to sink into it. So, you know, there are a little, you know, weak ways in and out. And, you know, we went down, I remember, after the first big celebrity thing that we had, and it was a two-night event. And we went down, we checked everything, and we kind of battened down the hatches. And since then, I think it's gotten to where it's you know, kind of impenetrable, unless you're able to jump 20 feet in the air. things will definitely fool you. And like I tell, you know, we get a lot of people that have never investigated, or, you know, if they say we're going ghost hunting, then chances are, you know, they never investigated a whole lot. So, you know, I mean, I always think I'm good with those people a lot of times, because I try to be funny, and I'm, you know, like a, you know, kind of a funny jackass, so, you know. And, you know, people will think that, you know, they almost expect to see, you know, Casper pop out of a wall, or, you know, Slimer to come down through there and just, you know, knock you down and slime you and stuff. But, you know, I tell people, you know, things happen here, and it doesn't look like it's anything out of the ordinary. Maybe someone will touch you on the shoulder. Maybe someone will whisper your name. Someone will walk across the hallway, and when you go to check and see who that person is, guess what? There's nobody there. And people are like, really? I'm like, yeah. You know, it's not like it is in, you know, movies, TV shows, things like that. It's stuff really happening, except there's just no way for you to explain what it is. And I think a lot of that gets mistaken for someone breaking in the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I guess you could probably think they're breaking in. So, well, Eric, I don't want to monopolize the time here. Well, I know you're not as familiar with the building as I am, so let's hear what you've got.
I mean, I am in the abstract, as
right,
I said, you know,
right.
having just edited and worked on this chapter and gone over the history of it and read various sources. And
I had to send him the map of the place, too, because it was so confusing for him to read what I wrote without having a visual picture of the layout of the building.
Yeah, what is a shallow freaking V, you know? So then I see what a shallow V is. Oh, now I get it. That makes sense. It's not a, you know, steep V. Anyway, some of the stories really were great. And I would love to hear you each. I don't want to kind of tell you, you know, lead you, but I'd love to hear kind of one really favorite tale. I mean, you've had so many experiences. And what you just said is very meaningful in terms of it's not the things that tend to happen are not going to be as dramatic or as cinematic, I suppose, as what people might expect, people who don't have experience. But what is just as powerful is the implications. I mean, if something happens and you cannot explain that with naturalistic, you know, physical, earthly explanations, then the implications of that are just as powerful as if, you know, an army of visible ghosts had just come blowing down the hallway and slimed you. And so I'm very interested in the implications, and I'm interested in hearing maybe from each of you, what is the story that made you really stop and think the most, where, you know, the implications of all of this, the reality of all this really, really hit you, struck you. I realize it's kind of easy to get into the routine, and this is, you know, when it's your job and when it's something you've done dozens, hundreds, thousands, I guess, ultimately, times, it can become a little bit routine. You can even get maybe a little bit jaded. But I'm wondering, it just seems to me, you know, at some point, probably, I'm guessing, the implications of all this, you know, hit you. So let's go with that.
Did you say go with me or that?
I said that. So either Zach or Adam. Let us begin with, we will begin at the end of the alphabet. Z for Zach.
Okay.
Tell me the story. I want a great ghost story, but one that really made you stop and think. Whoa, the implications.
What the hell was that?
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, you know, it's different to actually investigate than it is to actually be in a place all the time. And, you know, in months like October, we're there 5 or 6 nights a week, and, yeah, we've been a little tired, and we go through the routine. So this kind of gets to where it's kind of a chore. You know, you have to just basically just find yourself telling the same tales with no experience. But we always have that moment where it's like, oh, you know, this definitely brings us back. The story with Brian was one of those. So I'll tell you another one. It was right around last June. I had just gone down to help out a little bit, and it was a Saturday night. And I had walked in the break room wondering where Copperhead was. And they said, well, he's on Ward 2. He was managing, so he was kind of roving around. So I had run into him, and we were looking for his son. We couldn't find him. He was with a group. He's a guide as well. So we walked down the not-so-popular side of the second floor, wards B and E, which were admissions wards. There were violent patients there later on as well. It's kind of the spooky underdog of the second floor. It's not the children's ward. It doesn't have the famous murder stories. We walked down there, and we had some shadow activity. No communication. So we kind of lost track of the time and said, we've got to go find Andrew. So when we finally do, he's with a group, and we explain that we had some shadow figures going on and everything. So they're like, well, take us over there. So we go over. And Copperhead's talking to the people about what happened, and he starts telling stories. And, you know, honestly, I've heard the stories a lot, and I got a couple texts. My phone vibrated. So I walked down the hallway, probably halfway down the ward, to answer my phone and not disturb anybody. So I'm down there in this room. The addiction of playing Words with Friends calls to me, so I'm sitting there in a windowsill playing Words with Friends for probably 10, 15 minutes, and I hear Copperhead, and I hear them shuffling down the hallway. And he says from the hallway, Zach, dude, where are you? We're taking off. I turn my light on and walk out of the room. They all jump out of their skin. I was like, you didn't see me coming out? He's like, when'd you get in this room? I said, what do you mean? I said, I've been in there for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. Well, when'd you walk back from that other room down there? So I didn't go in that room down there. He's like, bull. I saw you walk in that room. I said, I wasn't in that room. I said, I can even prove it to you. There were a couple of pigeons that had moved, had come in through a broken window, and they had been roosting in there. I am allergic to bird dander. I couldn't even go halfway down the hallway without my throat closing up. I said, I can't go down there. And this lady looks really freaked out and really stunned. Copperhead scratching his head. His eyes are all big. He's like, dude, we saw you. You walked past the first arch, past the second arch, into that room right down there, and he's showing his light over there into that room. And I was like, ha, ha, ha. You know, then I actually came home and I researched doppelgangers a little bit. And I realized that it's some pretty weird stuff. And I'm glad I didn't see myself. we've had a few more things happen. You know, we've had, especially there for a while, you know, some of us had seen other ones. He had seen his son literally a week later. You know, we all heard each other. You know, I had an incident where I heard one of the former guides whisper my name in my ear. I was like, where the hell are you? I shined my light everywhere thinking he was trying to jump out and scare me. Like, you know, this ain't cool. He wasn't anywhere to be found. Come to find out, he was on the fourth floor at that point.
And what do you think that is? I mean, this doppelganger thing where you're visually, people are seeing you, but it's not you, or hearing you, and it's not you, or you're hearing them. What do you think that is?
Of course, everybody always says it's something bad. Everybody always wants to jump in and say, that's something, you know, demonic. That's something bad. You know, it very well could be. But it could very well also be somebody who, you know, I I'm kind of a scoundrel because I impersonate all my friends. You've heard me make fun of Copperhead's voice about 10 times so far. It could just be someone like me, you know, or it could be something really bad. You know, it could be one of the, you know, one of anything. I was told, though, through equipment that same ward where I had seen myself, that there's something bad down there and that none of the guides should walk down through there. I was told that by a person who had known he had passed on, and he was a deceased orderly, and I guess he sort of sees himself as a guardian angel for us, you know. He doesn't really want us to get into a lot of trouble, and he, you know, should we stay away down there, you know, via strong confirmation of yes. I'm like, okay, you know, and I've tried to talk to him since, and it kind of comes back to the first thing I said, can I talk to him? I can't seem to track him down. You know, so very well could be something pretty bad. I know I wouldn't really want to come face to face with it.
Yeah, I hear you. And what about you, Adam? Tell us one of your most profound stories and give us some insight to what you think is happening.
Well, seeing that I'm pretty much, you know, always on the first floor area, I have you pretty much say I have the first floor down really well. I've experienced a lot of different things, even from, you know, over from 1-4 in Civil War, but also over to A and B side. I've been down through there. I've seen a lot of shadows down in there. I was sitting down in A and D once, and I was inside of a room, and I was just inside the doorway itself. Well, there's a couple other people in the room with me and another one of the guides, and they was doing a session. Well, while they was doing the session, I kept hearing noises out in the hallway. It sounded like, you know, someone outside walking around in the hallway. So I was sitting there and, you know, just kept listening. And I was telling the other guide, I said, you know, I keep hearing something out here. There's something out here, you know. So I was sitting there and, you know, it was focused in on the hallway itself, and probably a foot or two above my head in the same doorway, I seen a head just kind of quickly come around. I mean, it was just really fast, but, you know, I can still see what looked like the face itself, but I can't really, you know, I can't explain what I seen, but, you know, that was probably one of the best things that I've visually seen there. I've, you know, like Zach and I described to you with Brian, with the knock on the wall, that was one of the best, to me, one of the best noises that I've ever heard within there that actually happened. I know I've heard screaming, you know, I have to, I'll go down and check on the groups on the first floor whenever they come down. And I was in a break room one night, and I heard a scream come out of Ward 1, and I thought, you know, it must have been a bat or something like that. Well, I'd go over to the door and open it up. I go inside the ward itself, and there's no one at all inside. I go all the way down to the end of the first ward, check all the doors and everything, make sure no one's in the rooms. You know, the scream was just, it was just a high-pitched female scream that just, you know, come out of nowhere. But, you know, there's a lot of different things that's happened, you know.
Now, do you think like a scream like that or what you're saying, do you think this is residual or do you think this is something intelligent that's trying to get your attention?
I don't know. I believe that we deal with both there, you know. It could have been residual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's it could have been either one. But it was definitely an attention getter, that's for sure.
Now I can't believe how fast this time is going. And guys, don't feel compelled to. We don't have to hang up at 11. The show won't be live, but the archive, the recorded show, keeps going for as long as we want. But before we run out of time for the live show, for those who are listening, I want to talk to both of you, Zach, about how your photography affects your view on the paranormal. And Adam, I want you to tell people about Glider and who it is, what it is, and what you're doing with Glider. This is like your alter ego. So We'll get back to the ghost in a minute, but just in case we run out of time, tell us all about Glider and how you came up with it and what it represents.
Okay. Glider. Actually, what Glider is, whenever I first started working there, I felt like I was intimidated a lot. You know, I would go down to the wards and feel like somebody was right on my back. I'd heard impatient stomps, things like that behind me. So one night a gentleman come in, and he wanted to follow me down through the wards and, you know, see if he could help me out. He was a psychic medium, and he decided that he was going to go down through there with me, which was fine. So we started down through, and as we was going down through, he kept saying he heard the words glide. You know, the spirits were saying glide, you know. He was telling me that at the time that they was intimidated, and I didn't understand what he meant by that. Well, the wheelchair that I have is low to the ground, and it has a low back on it itself. And he said that, you know, they look at me as I'm coming down through there, and they think I'm just floating across the floor itself.
Ooh.
So, you know, because the older wheelchairs had the higher backs and, you know, everything like that. So, but, you know, he told me that, and, you know, I just kind of, from that day on, you know, whenever I would speak to him, the spirits down there, you know, I would just talk to him, explain to him situations, stuff like that. You know, tell him, you know, I'm just here to talk to you, and you don't have to worry about anything, stuff like that. Well, I kind of, you know, I got bored one day, and I was at the house, and I kind of come up with this little ghost, and I put a couple wheels on him and a little foot rest below him, and I was like, that's pretty cool, you know? So I would go to different places, like Zach and I and Copperhead went to Hillview, and up there, on the table back in there that you can actually write your name on a piece of paper. So I wrote out, you know, Glider, and I drew out the little glider dude and stuck it up on there. So, you know, I got that. Well, long story short, I copyrighted him and everything like that. So now, you know, I kind of use him as my little logo,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, he goes everywhere I go. And, you know, I take him to events and things, and then take him and get him pictures, you know, with celebrities, stuff like that, and post them to his Facebook. And so it's pretty cool.
It's very cool. It's very cool. I mean, I don't even know if you understand how cool it is to when people meet you and hear about Glider. I mean, it's like you even said in your own bio. You know, there are no limits. You can do anything,
right.
And you don't let your condition hold you back. In fact, you've made it. You turn it into something positive. I think it's
correct.
I think it's brilliant, and I think it's the cutest thing ever. I love Glider.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, too, you know. I mean, you have to have fun with, you know, stuff. And like you said, you know, there is no limits to things. So, you know, that's my little dude, so.
He's a cool one.
Your little dude. And there he
yeah.
is. I'm looking at your Facebook right now. Yeah, it is. It's very cool. It was clever. It's cute, you know. And exactly like Teresa said, it's turning what is a, you know, could be a perceived liability into a strength, you know? We all have our strengths and weaknesses.
Yep.
And Zach, with your photography, I know that we all take pictures when we do, obviously, paranormal investigating. We take pictures, we're using cameras, but I think having a photographer's eye gives you a completely different perspective. And actually, everybody, Zach has graciously given us pictures for the Tala chapter, so his pictures will be in the book. So you'll get to see TZM pictures in a national book coming soon.
Thank God you didn't say TMZ. I get that every day. I'm like, I'm not
no.
the brag. It's
Give
my,
me some credit.
My initials.
Give me some credit. I got it.
Yeah,
and incidentally, Teresa, this is not a national book. This is an intergalactic,
yes.
Book.
In perpetuity.
And it will transcend dimensions. We will eventually go to other dimensions, and the book will be there. That's how big it's going to be.
Yeah, I guess my whole thing is that I actually, and it, you know, unless I know somebody whom I'm investigating with, it tends to drive them crazy. But I have this thing, if I go somewhere, I cannot get enjoyment out of a building unless I have, thoroughly explored it and photographed as much as I can. After that's done, I can investigate. But really, it's kind of a weird tick that I have that's always going to be my passion. And, you know, I'm not even taking photos for evidence. I'm taking them for my own satisfaction. And a lot of times, the beauty of that is it pulls me out of the situation, and it has me looking through the lens. It has me thinking about exposure times, about weird lighting and things like that. And then it's another Hillview story. Copperhead and Adam were back in the main hallway, and I had ventured down into the hospice area. And I can't remember the name of their icon there, but she was an older lady who had some mental handicaps and had a bunch of physical handicaps. And thought she was a little girl, but I'm in her room and I'm taking photos because there's a really cool curtain in there and I'm doing some light painting and everything, and I'm in there and I hear, "Hey," from out in the hallway. Caught me off guard, sent chills down my spine. Go out in the hallway and I'm like, "Adam, are you out here messing with me?" I thought Adam was put on a voice messing with me from the hallway, and I looked at him. I went clear down the hallway. Adam was probably, I don't know, 50 yards around four corners from me, and I was like, something was really wondering what I was doing down here, and I was completely out of paying attention. I had my head in the camera, so it caught me off guard. So I guess it kind of gives me a distorted view of everything, but, once something grabs me, it's usually grabbed everybody else, but you do get some strange photos from it at the same time. And I remember I was on a local radio show and they're like, "Zach, the paranormal photographer," and they're like, "What kind of images do you get?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not calling up demons and worshiping the devil and getting all these pictures. No, I'm just a photographer. I'm an explorer at heart. That's my thing." And that's kind of funny you asked me about breaking into buildings, because I tend to do that in buildings that are derelict and no one cares about anymore. I'm the guy that I'm watching out for. But it's like a distraction, but at the same time it works a lot of times because it takes your head out of where you are and sort of works as a sensory deprivation device.
Oh,
that's interesting. I would think,
yeah,
too, there's some aspect of that process, of your process, where of your routine when you're photographing a place, in a sense you're taking possession of it by taking all these pictures, by plotting it out photographically. In a sense, you are taking possession. As I said, does that make sense psychologically at all?
I'm definitely familiarizing myself. I'm taking, I'm taking something for myself, and I have annoyed people a bunch of times by doing that. They're like, "Dude, can't you just sit still? Where this equipment turned on." I made the joke before. Like, I could get smacked, I could get attacked and thrown to the ground by a gang of spirits, but unless I get a bunch of pictures, I'm happy with. I'm like, "Man, that really sucked. I really, I didn't have fun at all. It's really bad too." But my good friends understand, and they deal with it. And plus, I usually take their photos for free, so it's like a repayment to them for dealing with me.
Interesting. Because there are any kind of art, visual art, when you. Part of the psychology or the emotion of it, I guess, is that there is the theory, the underlying the psychological theory, that you're taking possession of it, or even you can take it a step beyond that, you're incorporating it into yourself, because you are taking it in and processing it and then putting out something else. Because that picture, sure, it represents you know, the angle, that view of that room, of that building, of that whatever that you took. But it isn't that. It's something different from that. So you have kind of processed that view and turned it into something else. It's probably a little more obvious, or it makes a little more sense when you were talking about painting or sculpture or something. But I think it also applies to photography, and that's one of the reasons that it is so appealing to people. And here we are. Look at how much things have changed with the smartphone explosion. You know, just the volume of images has exploded by, you know, multiples and quantums over the last, you know, just several years we're talking about. And I think part of the reason for that, beyond just documenting, people like to document their lives, of course, and see themselves. I'm coming to know what all this selfie stuff is about now. My daughter's 13, and she and all her friends take pictures of themselves all the time, and they're sharing them. It's this whole other world, this whole other universe. But, you know, it's really interesting that we have this explosion in photography and images, and I think, you know, there's got to be a reason for it, and I think part of the reason is just that when we take pictures, in a sense, on some level, you know, generally I'm sure it's subconscious, we feel that we are taking possession of that. So I actually do need to move on, being 11:06 here, and I got a bunch of crap I still have to do. But really, really great talking to you both. I can't wait until I do make it down there, and I have every intention of doing so. I certainly want to visit all these places that we're writing so extensively and in such detail, and, you know, all the historical background of these places. I mean, I feel like I know these places, but of course, if I haven't been there, I don't really know these places. So I'm very, very excited to get down there and love to meet you guys in person. Very much appreciate your talking with us and sharing your lives and your perspective on these things. And there's, of course, plenty more to talk about. I'm always really interested in hearing people's kind of, you know, metaphysical view. What does all this mean? I mean, obviously for the two of you, and I'm sure all the other guides, the simple existence of spirits is just simply a given. I mean, it's just, there's no question about it. Something sounds like you encounter all the time. But what does that mean? You know, what are the implications of that? Because, I mean, we still live in a world where at least half of the people, anyway, and certainly the scientific community, you know, the official fact community, you know, denies the existence of these things. So I'm always interested in hearing, you know, how people feel about that. But again, I'm unfortunately have to move on. I'm not sure. Teresa, can you control the board from your end, or is that something I have
no.
to do?
No, I can't. I can only control the chat room. But before we go, I want to say, everybody, if you haven't, check us out on Twitter, AM Haunted on Twitter, and Facebook. Please go to the Facebook page, AM Haunted on Facebook. And Zach and Adam, why don't you give your Facebook page, your websites before we sign off? And thank you so much for being on. It's been great. But tell everybody where they can get more information about you and what you're doing, and keep up with what's going on.
Zach, you first.
Oh, okay. If you guys just thanks for making it official. If you guys just want to follow the link that Teresa put on her Facebook to my Facebook, you can. You can check out pzmphoto.com, which is my photo website. Not really paranormal. It's more my commercial thing. It's what pays the bills, but it's got some interesting stuff on there, and check it out. It's got my number on there. Do not call me if you're creepy. If you're a creeper. So, thank you.
And Adam, I know you put the link in the chat room, but why don't you give the link one more time to your Facebook and Glider?
The link to my Facebook would be just www.facebook.com/bonnet3, and Glider's would be www.facebook.com/glider GH.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being on the show, guys. It's I can't believe how fast it went. It's been great talking to you. And remember, guys, this is just a sneak preview of the book, America's Most Haunted. We're so much more to talk about with Tala. You'll hear about Zach's experiences, my experiences there with Zach as well, and much more. We get in-depth, so the book will be coming out eventually. And
hopefully early next year is what we've
been
told.
Yes, early next year. And tune in next week. Next week we have a great guest. We have parapsychologist Dr. Lloyd Auerbach will be with us next week. And the link to the show, tell everybody, on demand, will be available moments after we go off the air. So thank you very much from me, Teresa Argy, the Haunted Housewife. Thanks, Adam. Thanks, Zach. Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you
how
so much.
You?
Have
thank
a good
thank you.
Evening.
Great
night.
Talking to you all. Thank you so much.
Good night.
Farewell.